Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome in to Outkick the Show. I'm your fearless leader, Clay Travis. I hope all of you are having fantastic Tuesdays, wherever you may be, across this great country. Tomorrow, I'll do the Outkick Show at 3 o'clock Eastern, and then I will follow up with an immediate show that we'll do. I'm not sure when it will be released, with Kelly Stewart, a.k.a. Kelly in Vegas, and we will be breaking down all of the NCAA tournament. Also, as soon as I finish this show, I'm going to sit down and write all of my picks for the first round of the NCAA tournament. That is 32 bets. I'm going to give you my picks for all 32 first-round games. We might break that down 16 and 16, just because there's so many different games that are out there. Maybe I'll put it all together. I don't know. Anyway, that is going to happen, and we will do that for everybody out there. My gifts to the people, that will be up on Outkick probably tomorrow or on Wednesday. That is tomorrow is Wednesday, either late tonight or tomorrow, probably tomorrow. Those picks will be up. And I'm going to be giving you some picks as well. Thanks to my friends at Prize Picks. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app. Over 3 million members out there. Unlike other apps, on Prize Picks, just you against the number, no sharks, no competitive leagues. You can win up to 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. You could turn $10 into $1,000, whether it's tournament season, playoff home court. No shortage of high-stakes basketball right now. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks. Turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Prize Picks has something for everybody. Basketball, hockey, League of Legends, you can even bet on that. You can pick Caitlin Clark, Connor McDavid, Jude Bellingham, all same entry. I'm going to be getting you hooked up. I'll be giving you picks out for Thursday and Friday on behalf of Prize Picks. Go check it out right now. Use the code OUTKICK, and you will be able to get hooked up in a big way. If you put in $100, you get back $100. That's with code OUTKICK. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Go to Prize Picks. Must be present in certain states and Canadian provinces. Void where prohibited. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. A bunch of different things that are, I believe, worthy of discussion right now. I was just talking about the NCAA tournament. Great video that is up from Jason Mayarez calling out the NCAA. I've told you that I believe the NCAA is effectively a broken organization. But one of the big topics, and I'm old man here. I don't know how many of you can see this if I zoom in or if I tilt this the right way. This is the weekend edition of the Wall Street Journal. And the headline, some of you may have seen when I shared this, is Caitlin Clark bigger than the men's tournament? That's the headline. And then there's another story. This is from today in the New York Times, and it says stars align for an ascendant game. Big picture of Caitlin Clark. And look, I give credit to Caitlin Clark. A lot of people are watching her. A lot of people care about her. But what I don't like is when I see sports media not using opinion, because opinions are fine. As my mom always used to say, opinions are like butts. Everybody's got one. I'm going to give you a ton of opinions all day long, every day. Some of them you're going to be like, you know what, Clay, you're right about this. Others of them you're going to be like, I hate you. I can't stand that opinion. That's life. But when I read things that are indisputably false in the media, I look and I say, I think it has to be called out. And so there are a couple of things here. I'm reading directly from the Wall Street Journal. First of all, let me say this. The NCAA tournament dwarfs for men the NCAA tournament for women. This is an indisputable fact. Tens of millions of more people will watch the NCAA men's tournament than the women's tournament. This is an indisputable truth. It always has been that way. I believe it always will be that way. Men are bigger, stronger, and faster. That makes men's basketball more fun to watch to most people than women's basketball at all levels. That's why the NBA players make $50 million a year and the WNBA players make $50,000 a year. It's because the men's game is far more exciting and the men are bigger, stronger, and faster. So when I read things like this from the Wall Street Journal, again, this was over the weekend, heading into Selection Sunday, I'm reading directly from the Wall Street Journal, it's become all but impossible to deny that for the first time ever, the women's tournament is shaping up to be a bigger deal than the men's. This is false. What would be a bigger deal? The event that tens of millions of more people watch or the event that tens of millions of fewer people watch? This is a lie. I'm disappointed in the Wall Street Journal. They continue. It starts with the star power. The women's tournament indisputably has the biggest attraction in college sports in Iowa's Caitlin Clark. That is a lie. Caitlin Clark is a big women's college basketball star. She is nowhere near as big as lots of college football stars. Way more people watch college basketball, college football every year than college basketball, period. It's not even comparable, the number of people that watch college football compared to college basketball. This is a falsehood that the Wall Street Journal is putting in their article. The notion that the men's NCAA, I'm reading directly from their article. The notion that the men's NCAA tournament, long the crown jewel of college sports, would ever get overshadowed by the women's event would have been completely unthinkable just a few years ago. Again, they start with a false premise that the women's tournament is bigger than the men's tournament. They then argue that Caitlin Clark is the biggest star in college athletics, which is not remotely true. Caleb Williams, kind of a big deal. Drake May, kind of a big deal, right? Jalen Milroe, kind of a big deal. Quinn Ewers, kind of a big deal. There are tons of college football players either about to be drafted into the NFL or returning next year that are infinitely bigger than Caitlin Clark. So they start with a premise that is untrue. They then layer multiple untruths, and these are not opinions. These are things that are put forward as truths. They then say that the women's tournament's going to be bigger, and they continue. The women's hoops is so great, the hype is, says the Wall Street Journal, that it's entirely plausible this year's championships game could be the first to outdraw the men's final. That is not likely to happen, okay? Last year, Caitlin Clark was in the final. 9.9 million people watched. 14.7 million, according to the Wall Street Journal, watched UConn-San Diego State, the smallest audience, they say, in March Madness history in this article. Nobody cared about UConn and San Diego State, and it still outdrew Caitlin Clark by 50%. Now, it's actually unlikely, I think, that Iowa's even going to make the championship, but it would be a tremendous upset if more people watched the women's NCAA tournament final than watched the men's final. But even if that were to end up happening, way more. Tens of millions of more people are going to watch the men's tournament than watch the women's tournament. And tens of millions of more people are going to watch and fill out their NCAA tournament brackets for men than fill out the NCAA tournament for women's. Now, it is true that the rig job is kind of in effect here because the men's NCAA tournament final is going to be on TBS. And the women's NCAA tournament final is going to be on ABC. And the women's final will air on Sunday, and the men's final will air on Monday night. So if Iowa had Caitlin Clark and they're going up against, I don't know, South Carolina, is that even possible? Let me check. I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't even looked at the women's bracket yet. So I don't even know. Did they put South Carolina on the opposite side? South Carolina here. Iowa is not unintelligently. They put Iowa on the other side of the bracket. So in theory, Iowa and South Carolina could meet in the title game, which is what the NCAA tournament would want because South Carolina hasn't lost this year and Iowa is 29-4. So that would be their hope. They're trying to set that up to happen. But again, I'm not trying to take a shot at women's college basketball. I've watched, I bet, more women's college basketball historically than almost anybody has. My dad loved Pat Summitt and the Lady Vols. We had women's college basketball on in my house all the time because the Lady Vols and UConn was a huge story back in the day. Pat Summitt against Gino Auriemma was bigger, I think, than anything in women's college basketball right now. A lot of people cared. A lot of people care about Caitlin Clark. But when I see the Wall Street Journal writing this article, and then I see the New York Times the next day in their column saying, as we head into March Madness, it's the women's side of the tournament that is taking center stage. It's the women's stars who shine the brightest. It's the women's game with the most intriguing storylines. That's not even debatable. That's a lie. It's very debatable. Is Matt Painter going to choke with Purdue again? Pretty interesting story. Is UConn and Danny Hurley going to repeat? Interesting story. Is UNC going to battle back from not making the tournament last year to surge this year? Can Kelvin Sampson get revenge on the NCAA tournament and Houston win? Can Rick Barnes in Tennessee actually advance? Will Dalton Connect be the best player? Is Zach Edey going to be the best player? What's going to happen with so many teams? Is Arizona any good in the last year of the Pac-12? There are a lot of storylines. Marquette, Kentucky. The men's tournament has a bevy of storylines. Can John Calipari get Kentucky back to winning? When I see things that are not true being described as not even debatable in both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, my antenna goes up and I say, this is not about sports at all. This is identity politics masquerading as sports. This is, oh, we want to denigrate male athletics instead of treating it fairly and acknowledging, wait a minute, there's way more people who care about the NCAA tournament for men than women. It's not even comparable. It's probably 10-1. And when I see the arguments being made that it's indisputable that the women's game has more stars, I mean, the first couple of rounds of the women's NCAA tournament typically don't even have major upsets because there's such a huge gap between the quality of the women's teams, whereas a men's 16 seed could beat a men's 1 seed. 0% chance of that happening in the women's tournament. So the men's tournament is going to dwarf the women's tournament. And that's not a slight at Caitlin Clark. That's not an attack on women's athletics. But why is it that suddenly all major media outlets are trying to pretend that something that is not true is true? It's identity politics. this is important. People say, like, Clay, how did you see what was happening in America before other people did? How did OutKick get so big? It's because I saw identity politics coming through the prism of sports, where suddenly things that we have been doing for an entire generation, arguing like who's the best quarterback, who's the best player, who's the best coach, suddenly people on the left started coming for sports. And if you said, you know, I don't think Justin Fields is a very good quarterback, people were like, that's because you're racist and don't think black people can play quarterback. What? Nobody has thought that. I grew up with T. Martin winning a national championship for Tennessee. The first quarterback I remember watching play quarterback for Tennessee was Tony Robinson. He was a black guy, FYI. The first quarterback that the Tennessee Titans have had, and the best quarterback the Tennessee Titans have ever had, took the Titans to the Super Bowl. He was Steve McNair. In my home state of Tennessee, in 1998, T. Martin won a national championship, and in 1999, Steve McNair took the Titans to the Super Bowl. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody in my entire life argue that somebody couldn't succeed at quarterback because of their race. I legitimately, in my entire life as a sports fan, have never heard anyone that I know make that argument. Michael Vick went number one overall. Jamarcus Russell, I think I'm correct. Adam, make sure that I'm right about this. Jamarcus Russell went number one overall. Cam Newton went number one overall. Vince Young was the first quarterback taken in his draft, number three overall by the Titans, and I was cheering for it, unfortunately. Jameis Winston went number one overall. Bryce Young went number one overall. Anthony Richardson went fourth. C.J. Stroud went second in the last draft. Nobody cares about the race of quarterbacks. I would support the Titans having a transgender midget at quarterback if he could win the AFC, he, she, whatever friggin' pronoun they want to use, could win the AFC South and actually take the Titans to the Super Bowl. There may be some trans midgets out there, frankly, who are better than Will Levis. All of these things prove that all the NFL cares about is winning, but it's identity politics that has divided all of us, right? They're trying to use identity politics with women's basketball here, too. Oh, men's basketball stinks now. Nobody watches it. What are you talking about? The NCAA tournament for men just set an all-time record for viewership like a year ago. I don't even think the Caitlin Clark era has been as highly rated as the UConn-Tennessee women's era was like 20 years ago. Pay particular attention when media figures tell you that's not even debatable. The only thing in sports is debate. In sports media. I mean, when somebody writes a paragraph in the New York Times, like, as we head into March Madness, it's the women's side of the tournament taking center stage. It's the women's stars who shine the brightest. It's the women's game with the most intriguing storylines. That's not even debatable. Hashtag girl power, girl boss. No, it is debatable. It's not true. And when the Wall Street Journal tries to argue Caitlin Clark is bigger than the entire men's basketball tournament, are you kidding me? There will be dozens of NCAA tournament games that are higher watched than the most watched Caitlin Clark game. Nobody will watch, by and large, the early rounds of the NCAA women's tournament. It will be a pale shadow of the men's tournament. These are lies. And when you're being told lies, and you're being told lies by people who want to interject identity politics and say, it's not even debatable, I think your eyebrows should go up and you should say, hey, what is the actual story here? So lies being spread. I'm disappointed in the Wall Street Journal because usually they're better than this. The New York Times spreads lies all the time. When they're doing it, using sports as the prism, I think that's a big deal. All right, a couple of other things that I think are significant here. Trump, reports are, does not have $450 million in cash. And I saw like Ted Lieu tweeted, oh, he's not actually a billionaire if he doesn't have $450 million in cash. And I want to pull my hair out. I've been telling you guys this was going to happen for some time. Most people don't understand how rich people money works. And as a newly rich person, let me just, I'll take you into my finances. I am probably worth, depending on how real estate gets valued, $100 million right now, given the money that I have and the money that is committed to me and that is all coming still in. Right now in my checking accounts, I have probably $200,000 in cash. That's a rough estimate. I'll sit down. I've got to pay some bills here shortly, and I'll know exactly. So I'm worth $100 million, and I probably have $200,000 in cash. Full disclosure, I've got around $25 million in stock right now. I'm rich. It's great to be rich. I'm not saying this to brag. I couldn't put forward $100 million in cash. I couldn't put forward any more, probably, than $25 million in cash. That doesn't mean I'm not worth $100 million. It means most rich people have money tied up in a variety of assets that is not liquid in nature. I've got, I don't know, stakes in 9 or 10 different buildings. I've got stakes in a lot of different private equity funds that I probably have got partial ownership now in 30 different companies, some very small, some higher stakes, right? What's that worth on any given day? That's how rich people roll, all right? I've got houses. I got a house in here. I got 4 houses right now, I think. The house I live in Nashville, the house I'm building in Nashville. It's going to be a $15 million house in Nashville. I've got a place in Rosemary Beach, Florida, and I'm building a place in Alice Beach, Florida. I've probably, across those 4 properties, got, I don't know, doing math in my head, $40 or $50 million in real estate, properties that I own, but I don't know because I'm not selling them. And if I had to suddenly sell them immediately, I would get way less than their market value would be. Commercial real estate. I own stakes in buildings that rent to commercial companies. I don't know what that would be worth right now because I might have 10% stake. I can't sell it. I can't go and be like, hey, you guys have to sell this property. I don't own the majority of it. I bring all of this up because I think I have decent optics on rich people. I'm not a billionaire. I'm a $100 millionaire. But a lot of the same things that I would be doing with my money, a billionaire would be doing with his money. And so when people say, oh, Trump's not a billionaire, he doesn't have $450 million in cash, I say to you, many of you are imbeciles. You have no idea how rich people live. It would make no sense for a billionaire to be sitting around with $450 million in functional cash equivalents, by and large. Now, if you're worth $200 billion, maybe you have $400 million in cash. Although I would bet Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, who are the two richest people in America right now, I believe, I would bet neither one of them has anywhere close to $450 million in cash, because it would make no sense to do that. What's going on here is they are trying to financially strangle Donald Trump's ability to run his businesses while they are simultaneously trying to put him in prison for the rest of his life. Trump is, as we speak today, the only person to ever be president of the United States in my life and make less money as a result. If Trump had never entered into politics, he would be worth billions of dollars more, probably, than he is worth today. He has cost himself certainly hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, based on his choice to run for political office. Doesn't ever get talked about. I don't think that most people understand it. But far from being, say, Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, and making himself fabulously wealthy based on his presidency, Trump has lost money. And so I said this on the show the other day. I wish that I was worth billions of dollars. I wish that I had Elon Musk money. If I did, I would give Trump the $450 million collateralized against some of his assets. I wouldn't just give him the cash to be able to make this bond, because I believe that he is being persecuted based on his political beliefs. Trump did nothing wrong with the loan that he got. That he was repaid in full. The bank that gave him the Trump Organization the loan said they got repaid in full. There was no fraud. They didn't actually change any of the loan terms. They do their own due diligence. To me, this is, I believe, Trump people going after him because of him. And by the way, people say, my wife even says, why are you going to tell people about the money that you have? Because when I didn't have money, I told you I didn't have money. I don't have a filter. I will tell you everything that I am doing on a day-to-day basis, because you can agree or disagree with it. I'll share my life stories. I'll share my financial successes before I shared my financial failures. Nobody said, hey, when you lost $50,000 selling SEC-colored pants, nobody was like, I don't know why you shared that story at all. When I lost a couple of $100,000 investing in a company and I talked about it, happens all the time. Losing money, people are fine with me telling the story. Making myself fabulously wealthy based on my hard work, oh, you shouldn't be talking about that. I want all of you to be rich too. I want all of you to find something that you can excel in as well. And so I feel like I have decent optics on this. Before I was rich, I would have thought, oh yeah, every billionaire has hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. No, most of them don't. Most of them have credit lines at banks. A lot of them keep their money in stock and they live off of the credit lines. I'm just telling you what I've learned. I'm a newly rich guy. I didn't have money. My parents didn't make $50,000 a year. I don't know all these rich people shenanigans. I don't know the stories. I don't know how they live. Now I do. This doesn't surprise me at all. Speaking of rich people, Clemson is suing the ACC, arguing that the grant of rights is onerous and that they shouldn't have the cost structure that they do. I grabbed one part. They filed a lawsuit in Pickens County, which is where Clemson is. The ACC's exit fee, they say, is $140 million. And they say that's absurdly high compared to other conferences. And they say that this is too onerous. And basically, Clemson and Florida State want out of the ACC. And if Clemson and Florida State can leave, North Carolina, Virginia, Virginia Tech, NC State, maybe Miami as well, all of those schools would leave too. And I think most of them would go to the SEC and the Big Ten. And to me, where we're headed, what feels inevitable is we're basically going to have two major conferences. We're going to have the Big Ten and we're going to have the SEC. And I don't know if the SEC would take all of those schools. I think the SEC would like to have North Carolina and Virginia, maybe Virginia Tech and NC State, and then have the cohesive totality of the South. And that would get them to 20. And then they could have two divisions of 10. That might be the direction that they would go. I think the Big Ten would love to come down further south. I don't know how the academics of Clemson and Florida State would work in the Big Ten. I don't know how Miami would do. But I do think that a lot of these schools want out of the ACC because they see the writing on the wall, which is we're headed for a duopoly, the SEC and the Big Ten. I think the Big 12 is going to kind of be there on the fringe, but I think it's inevitable that the ACC is going to break up. And I think the Big 12 will probably take the remaining ACC schools in as a part of its conference, and you'll have a Big 2, and then you'll have the Big 12 kind of floating around out there as a potential third option. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe schools like Syracuse and Boston College and Pittsburgh, maybe they go back hat in hand to the Big East and we get a reformed version of the Big East. Maybe that could happen with some independent college football teams. Maybe that could be an option if they don't get in, but I think that's where we're headed. Speaking of money, ESPN has officially announced that they got $7.8 billion. That's how much ESPN is spending for the college football playoff through the 2032 season. I think it's $1.3 billion a year. That is basically $700 or $800 million more than what they were paying for the college football playoff. What I think is significant here is two things. One, ESPN, if they're going to keep the NBA, and now that they've gotten a college football playoff, their profit is going to go to zero. So the costs of just getting the NBA, the package that they have now, and the college football playoff is going to take their profit to zero. That's a big deal for Disney. A lot of money on the line on ESPN+. Secondly, the rate of big money dollars for sports has really dried up. And I told you this was coming for a while, that we were going to hit maximum dollar value for television rights or streaming rights. We've hit it. Possibility now is out there that some leagues might have to start to come back because the collapse of the cable and satellite bundle is going to be destructive to the overall revenue produced by these sports leagues. And even money is the new reality in many of these places. If you look at the rate of increase, I'm told nobody else was bidding against ESPN. That is, Fox wasn't a serious bidder. NBC wasn't a serious bidder. CBS wasn't a serious bidder. Basically, ESPN was going mano a mano to buy the college football playoff. And so this is ominous, I think. Again, it goes through 2032. We'll see what ends up happening in terms of the number of games. But I think this is pretty significant. Couple of other stories that are out there. Jim Harbaugh is having a yard sale as he prepares to leave and move to California to coach the Chargers. Full disclosure, my wife still has yard sales. We had clothes on our porch that she was selling this year. I saw my friend Nate Bargatze did a bit on this where his wife still sells gear. We are 100 millionaires, and my wife is charging like $5 for a shirt on our front porch. Nate, I love this. He's like, best case scenario, you get $5. Worst case scenario, someone shows up and murders you. I tried to win this argument with my wife. I've tried to be like, you're getting like $300 in yard sale money to work all day, and that is not changing the trajectory of our life. And in exchange for that $300, you've got people just walking all over our front porch, thumbing. I swear to God, some of my old clothes are out there that she's getting $2 for. People are going through some of my old shirts. I don't even know what she puts out there. And I don't understand this compunction of women. I guarantee you, Jim Harbaugh's wife, Jim Harbaugh is a 100 millionaire. He just got a $10 million a year plus job in LA. And I guarantee you, Jim Harbaugh's wife is like, we should have a yard sale if we're going to be moving all the way across the country. I always say, just donate it. If we've got stuff that we don't need anymore, fill up the car, take it to Goodwill, let people have it for free. Instead, we have garage sales, yard sales. I don't understand it, but I saw the picture of Jim Harbaugh. I've talked about this with other guys that I know. I heard Nate Bargatze do a whole comedic bit about it. I don't understand why wives of rich guys decide that they need to make $300 on a yard sale instead of just donating all of the stuff. But I saw a picture of Jim Harbaugh. I've never met Jim Harbaugh, but I felt like I locked eyes with him in that photo, and I saw into his soul, and he thought the same thing. This is ridiculous. I don't know why we're having a yard sale, but my wife wants to do it, and I'm not going to fight with her about it because I'm going to lose that battle. And I guarantee you at the end of the day, his wife's going to have like $300, and it's going to have spent all day on it, and that is going to be Jim Harbaugh probably makes $300 a minute under his new coaching contract. He's not going to say a word because she's going to be proud of that $300. And if he says something, they're going to be fighting. And if this clip gets shared, my wife's going to be mad at me because she's going to be like, well, what do you want us to do? Just give away the things? Yeah, I do, but I'm not going to win that battle. And no other rich guy is either. So come the fall, you can show up at my house and buy one of my shirts for $4 because my wife has decided that we need to have a yard sale. I'm just telling you the truth. I don't need the money. I don't want people out there like, oh my God, Clay Travis has no money. He's having a yard sale. Times have gotten tough. No, my wife's going to make $300. I don't know what we're going to do with it. Finally, I might be the only heterosexual man in America who is obsessed with this Kate Middleton story. And I know a lot of you out there are like, we fought a revolution so we don't have to care about the royal family. I understand. I care about the royal family. I'm a heterosexual man. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I love all of the drama. I watch all of the interviews. I watch The Crown. I am an American. I live in a republic democracy, thankfully, that is not ruled by anyone on a crown, anyone wearing a crown, sitting on a throne. I can't get enough of it. I don't know what's going on here. I saw the video yesterday that Piers Morgan shared. I shared a photo of that video. Immediately, every single one of you said it was fake. All of you claim that you don't care about Kate Middleton. As soon as I post anything about Kate Middleton, all of you immediately react. Thousands of you. Everybody reacts. Everybody claims they don't care. Everybody cares. I'm going to search Kate Middleton. I saw this when I posted that I cared. I saw a bunch of you went and shared as well. On the 11th of March, I shared, am I the only straight man in America obsessed with what in the world is going on with Kate Middleton? Nothing in this story adds up. What's really going on here? Give me your theories. I asked that on March the 11th. A million views almost of that tweet. That is a lot of views for a tweet that people claim they don't care about. 841 responses. Okay? Let's compare that. I shared my four NCAA tournament teams yesterday along with a graphic of the bracket. Let's just see what the results actually are of the graphic of the bracket. Because I'll see how many people actually looked at that. Obviously, people care about the NCAA tournament. A lot of people are going to be watching. I shared my four teams that I thought were going to make the NCAA tournament, and I shared the bracket. A million people checked on my Kate Middleton take and shared your own takes. 160,000 reacted to my NCAA tournament bracket. My final four, by the way, UConn, Houston, Tennessee, I know, and St. Mary's. Only 155 of you responded giving me your predictions. So way more people care about Kate Middleton than care for my audience than care about my NCAA tournament picks. So I'm going to say it. A lot of you are lying. A lot of you are secretly getting up in the middle of the night, hiding, pretending that you don't care, searching for Kate Middleton theories. You're busted. It's not all women. There's a lot of straight men. I want you to come out of the royal closet, and I want you to comfortably admit that you are like me and also obsessed with all the royal family drama. There are lots of straight men out there, like me, that like boobs. You like Sydney Sweeney. You like girls in bikinis. And you also care about the royal family. You can admit it. You can come clean. Come into the light. Admit the truth. Way more of you care about Kate Middleton than are willing to admit it. I think she had a hysterectomy. It's my theory. Fairly significant surgery. Didn't want to disclose it. And has not wanted to be in public since. Maybe there was a complication associated with the hysterectomy. This is my opinion based on all the reading that I have done. And I think that video of them out shopping yesterday, I think that was really Kate Middleton. I don't buy all these crazy conspiracy theories that many of you, even the heterosexual men, have bought into. All right. I love all of you. DBAP, unless you need an SBAP tomorrow, I'll prove my heterosexual bona fides by making NCAA tournament picks for all of you. Enjoy the games tonight. DBAP, unless you need an SBAP. Maybe I'm being a pussy by even admitting how much I love Kate Middleton drama and royal family drama in general. The Crown is a very good show. You should watch it. This has been Outkick the Show.